Let's say you're a supporter of Julian Assange. Let's say that you decided to go visit Julian Assange when he was in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. And let's say that you're an American citizen. What you would have done would be to go to the Ecuadorian embassy, give the person at the front desk your ID, and then turn over your cell phone. No electronic devices are allowed in embassies, after all. But as it turns out, Ecuadorian authorities were allegedly working with the CIA to download all of the information on every cell phone from every visitor to Assange at the embassy. That included American citizens. And now they are arguing in court that their constitutional rights were violated. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. In most court cases against the CIA, the agency's lawyers simply walk into the court and say the magic words, national security, and the case is dismissed. That happens all the time. But that hasn't happened in this case. In December, a federal judge in New York ruled that four Americans who visited Assange in the embassy and who had their data stolen can proceed with a case against the CIA and against a contractor that the CIA hired to gather the information. Note, however, that the judge ruled against the plaintiffs on two other issues. The judge said that they could not sue the CIA for wiretapping the embassy and for listening in on their conversations with Assange. This was done with the Ecuadorian government's approval. The plaintiffs also could not sue for money. But if it is true that the CIA received the contents of their phones that were accessed by the contractor, that would be a serious legal violation. The CIA is not a law enforcement organization, and even if it was, it didn't have a warrant or a court order allowing it to violate the privacy of these Americans. We're joined first today by Joe Loria. He's the editor-in-chief of Consortium News, founded by the late Robert Perry, and he's a former journalist for the Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, and the Times of London. Joe, thanks so much for being with us.
No problem, John. Good to see you.
Joe, I'd like to start by asking you to explain to our viewers what the process was for visitors to the Ecuadorian embassy in London when Julian was there. It seems to me that you couldn't just walk into the embassy and say, hi, I'd like to see Julian Assange. There was some sort of a process. So the embassy, and by extension the contractor and the CIA, would have known the nationalities of the people going there. What was that process?
Well, I have to say I've never visited Julian at the embassy, so I only know this secondhand. I think it changed with the new government in Ecuador. It became, for example, the lawsuit that four Americans have entered into as plaintiffs against the Central Intelligence Agency, which survived a motion to dismiss by the CIA, and which their lawyers say is probably the first time, and you may know something about this, John, the first time the CIA as an organization has ever been sued. There have been individuals in the CIA who have been sued, but not the entire organization. So this judge in the Southern District of New York has allowed the court case to go through. And what was the suit about? Well, when they went to visit Julian at the embassy, they had to leave their phones at the front desk. And I don't know if that was the case before the Moreno government took over from Rafael Correa. That I can't answer. But what is certain is that the spying operation only began, it began behind the back of the Correa government and then openly with the Moreno government to use this UC Global company in Spain working with the Central Intelligence Agency. This is at least what's being alleged in the court case that's still going on in Spain against the founder of David Morales, the head of UC Global. So you got spied on. They knew they would be spied on, and Julian had a white noise radio, and they did whatever they could. They went into the women's room where there was also apparently a bug. So they did whatever they could to try to not be overheard, but the fact was their phones were taken, their serial numbers was taken, other details, which would allow them even to be monitored after they left the embassy when they got the phones back. So it was it's something that the CIA may actually lose in court, which is amazing, which is a Fourth Amendment case, of course.
What the plaintiffs in this case are alleging is that when visitors went into the embassy, they had to turn over their cell phones. That would be normal in any embassy. You can't just walk into an embassy with an electronic device. But they're further alleging that the CIA and the Ecuadorian government were working with a private company, whereby the company would take the cell phones during the visit, download all the contents, and then turn that over to the CIA. The crux here is that this was done to American citizens in violation of their constitutional rights. And this was all while the CIA and the Ecuadorians had completely wired the embassy for both video and audio in Julian's living quarters, including in his bathroom, in order to eavesdrop on those conversations. So with all this effort, what exactly was it that the CIA was trying to collect? What were they so concerned about?
Well, certainly they also, of course, as we know, spied on Julian's discussion with his lawyers. I think that was really important for them. Clearly, they're preparing an indictment against him and to be able to know in advance the defense strategy in the most egregious abuse of process possible. They should have had this case thrown out immediately. Just shows you how corrupt this whole thing is. That was, I think, key to the CIA. Now, what they were also trying to do was widen the net, you know, of any people in WikiLeaks if they could bring charges against. At a certain point, they were sending out letters to, and even recently, some of Julian's associates, like James Ball, who turned against Julian Assange, writes for The Guardian, but had worked for WikiLeaks at one point. The FBI came to his door last summer, I believe, here in London, and he told him to go to hell, to his credit. And again, he's a kind of an enemy of Julian right now, but still he knew that he was not going to rat on a journalist.
Joe, the Spanish contractor we're talking about here is called UC Global. What can you tell us about that company? What was their role in the Assange saga, and how do we know what we know now about UC Global?
You know what we know about UC Global because of a court case in Spain, because of the reporting of that court case by El País, because of a documentary made by John Goetz, who is was a reporter at Der Spiegel and now works for a public broadcaster in Germany and the Süddeutsche Zeitung as an investigative team, and from Max Blumenthal of the Gray Zone. They all did great reporting to reveal what was going on. And what we know is that Sheldon, it's a bizarre story, and it was hard to believe at first, but well, you worked at the CIA, so maybe it wouldn't be so bizarre for you, John, but that Sheldon Adelson, yeah, a right-winger, a pro-Israel, Trump supporter, you know, the casino magnet in Las Vegas and in Macau and all these other ventures that he has, out of his Las Vegas casino was a connection made with David Morales, the head of this kind of two-bit Spanish security firm. And they got a contract. This is what has come out, anyways, alleged that there's a contract, not, of course, between the CIA, but some front company. It could very well be the casino. I don't know for sure. Nobody has seen this contract. I haven't, anyway, to spy on Julian Assange. Now, what happened was UC Global had been hired by the Ecuadorian government originally to provide security for Rafael Correa and his family. That's how they first got involved. Then they asked Correa asked UC Global to also provide security for Julian Assange, not against him, for him at the embassy. And that was in place. And then this deal happened where the CIA, through the using a casino in Las Vegas of Sheldon Adelson, worked out a deal where David Morales, the head of UC Global, a former Special Forces guy, I think, in Spain, start saying, we're in the big league now. We're playing with the big boys. We're with our American friends, which has been interpreted to mean the CIA. So instead of protecting Julian Assange, they turned those security cameras against Assange, ultimately, in the end, getting technically sufficient enough to have a full 24/7 live audio and video stream that people back in Langley or wherever can monitor exactly what's going on in real time inside that embassy, whenever a lawyer showed up, his doctors, any of his associates. So UC Global got found out because somebody tried to blackmail Kristen Hrafnsson, the current editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks, by showing photographs of the from inside the embassy of Julian meeting his lawyers and doctors, etc. And Christian went to the police and the Spanish police did an investigation. Morales has been arrested for violating the privacy of Julian Assange, and he's still on trial on that.
Spanish authorities have told the press that the Justice Department here in Washington has been uncooperative and has ignored three separate requests from the Spanish courts for information relating to the relationship between the CIA and UC Global. The Spanish have also said that the CIA listened in on conversations between Julian Assange and his attorneys, his doctors, his advisors, journalists, pretty much everybody else. Will any of this matter, either in his upcoming extradition hearing or if he is extradited, in his court case in Alexandria, Virginia?
It sure as hell should. But judging by the way this case has been going on so far now for 4 years, I doubt it. And I'm worried about that, obviously. This is an important part of the defense. Now, what the hearing that's coming up next month is simply to overturn a ridiculous decision by Jonathan Swift, a single high court judge who, in a three-page ruling on his own, dismissed a 150-page submission by Assange's lawyers, why the decision by the Home Secretary to extradite Julian should be overturned, and why most of Judge Vanessa Barrett's in the low court, even though she ordered him released on medical grounds and the condition of U.S. prisons, why most of everything else she said about that on the law was wrong. And Swift denied their right to appeal. So this is an appeal to try to appeal. That's what they're going to try to win in February. And if he loses it, Julian could be on a plane that night back to the United States, with only the European Court of Human Rights being a possible way to stop that, if they can order the plane off the tarmac and stop Julian from being extradited. I don't know if that's going to happen. That's just one possible scenario. But everything that you said, John, it should be part of this case. If it had been already, I think would have been thrown out. This can't be a more abusive thing to just spy on the defendant's attorneys. I mean, it's ridiculous. Now, of course, the Department of Justice says, and by the way, what a surprise that they're not cooperating with the Spanish authorities. But the Department of Justice claims that there's a Chinese wall between them and the CIA, and they're not sharing anything.
Joe Loria, really appreciate you coming on today. Thank you. We're speaking with journalist and editor Joe Loria about the Julian Assange case. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll speak with another of Julian's friends, Randy Credico, to discuss what Assange could face in the United States. Don't go away.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact.
Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're now speaking with Randy Credico. Randy is a longtime comedian and social justice activist. He's the former director of the William M. Kunstler Fund for Social Justice and host of the radio show Live on the Fly, which airs every Friday afternoon from 3 to 4 p.m. on New York's WBAI radio. Randy, great having you with us. Thanks for joining.
Hey, it's great to be back. It's always great to be on with you, John. Thank you for inviting me once again.
Randy, I'd like to turn to the hearing in London on February 20th and 21st before the High Court in the UK. This is likely the final appeal before what many are calling a likely extradition. What are the issues that are going to be considered in this hearing?
I think it's all going to be political. It boils down to this. Do the judges have any independence or any shame? Because this is a slam dunk case for Assange. Or are they going to just buckle under to the pressure from the national security state of the U.S., which really is controls the national security state of the UK and the CIA in particular, as you know. They don't want him out at this point, and we'll see how much influence is inflicted on these two judges. I think it's two judges that are going to make this decision, because we know they hang out in these meeting rooms or, you know, private clubs, the judges with some of these MPs or House of Lords, reactionaries, whatever. And I know there's a lot of influence being put on them. And it just, what's their price? It's like Judge Hoffman in Kaufman in the Rosenberg trial got a lot of pressure on him to, you know, sentence Julius and Ethel Rosenberg to death. And it was only because he was blackmailed by J. Edgar Hoover and specifically by Roy Cohn. You know, so I don't know what the issues are. I mean, it's not about justice. I mean, this is, I mean, if you say Kafka-esque, you know, Kafka, Joseph K. didn't know what he was being charged with. Julian knows what he's being charged with, and that is basically practicing journalism that embarrassed the UK and the US. So there, it doesn't matter what we've seen, whether it be the pervert Ziggy being discredited and recanting his testimony, UC Global, the Crown Prosecutor Service's complicity with Sweden and Marion Nye, I believe. You know, it just goes on and on with it. The assassination attempt on his life. You know, all of these things, spying on the lawyers and all of that, all of these things, would any court of justice that was objective would have thrown this thing out a long time ago. But this is a political trial, and it's a show trial, as John Pilger has described it for the last 12 years, what this prosecution was all about, is all about. So it's a roll of the dice. Do these guys have any integrity, the judges, and stand up before they end up in a grave like all of us, and, you know, have something that their grandchildren can stop by and say, this was a man in this grave here, my grandfather, that had integrity. I don't know what goes through their minds, but the pressure is so great on them. I don't expect a good outcome.
One of the issues that I've long been stuck on is the fact that the UK is a member of the European Court of Human Rights. There are three precedents whereby the European Court of Human Rights has refused to extradite prisoners to the United States because of the way in which the U.S. uses solitary confinement as a punishment. American prosecutors have said that they will not put Julian in solitary. But listen, that goes about as far as me saying that I won't put Julian in solitary. It means nothing. The UK government has respected these three previous decisions, but they have also said that they may not respect the court if it rules to not extradite Julian. Why? Why, if the UK is still a member of the court?
Well, because, you know, they're outlaws. Why did they just bomb Yemen? I mean, why did they bomb Iraq? And why? I mean, it's like, who knows? They're jailing people left and right for speaking their minds in the UK. The Magna Carta is nothing more than a museum piece. That's it. You know, so it has... It's not binding. It's a thing of the past, and the Brits are. That's what they'll do. They'll just you know, shirk the law and do what they want to do. You know, might makes right in this, and they won't abide by it. But what that will do will tie. Maybe it will be tied up in the courts. That'll be another appeal. Does Britain have the right to ignore this court? And that'll be another 2 or 3 years. They don't want them operating right now. We got business to do, and the business is war. We don't need a martyr coming out, is what they're thinking, a living martyr we need to set an example that people can't, unmask what our motivations are on this planet. They're vile wars. They're spying on everybody. And Assange exposed that. I don't think they're fearful of him coming back doing that again, but what's he going to say when he comes out? I mean, he's got 5 years in this prison and 7 years in the Ecuadorian embassy. They're afraid that he's going to say something when he comes out that he hadn't released before, A, and B, he's going to be very frail, and he's going to be a big embarrassment to the U.S. and U.K., further damaging their image in the world. So it's a quandary for them. That's all I can tell you. But they're not, they ignore the laws. What, look, you know, 86, Nicaragua went to the world court and they were awarded like billions of dollars for the mining of the harbors and all of that. Guess what? The U.S. ignored it. The U.K., Chagos Islands, they ignore all of these decisions because they can.
Many of Julian's friends and supporters believe that if he loses his appeal in the UK High Court, that he will immediately be whisked off to a waiting car and then placed on a CIA plane back to the United States. If that were to happen, he would be in what is called the federal lockup in Alexandria, Virginia, within probably 10 hours. Do you believe that's what we should be prepared for? Is the fix in on this case, or does he have a Hail Mary chance at victory here?
Well, I think he has a Hail Mary chance. I don't want to give up hope. You know, hope is only successful if you that hope drives you to a direct action. But I think you have to prepare for that, but do everything you can right now. And the pressure's got to be on the UK government right now, right? That's the battle right now, is the UK, the judges in that case. The UK system of justice is on trial right now before he's tried over here. And that's why people need to mobilize right now and demonstrate in front of the embassy in D.C., where you live, and here at the UK consulate, at the UN, and really embarrass and put the pressure on them. And of course, they'll be doing that in London and places around the world. The fact is, we don't have enough ground troops out there, to be honest with you. We have for Gaza, but we don't have for Julian. He's been put on the back burner, which works well for this administration and I guess the UK administration. But I think you just have to be prepared for direct action, make a lot of noises. As John Pilger said, get out there. Action is the only thing that's going to work. Reasoning is not going to work. Action is going to work. And so we all know, I mean, you've dealt with this for 8 years. You know what's going to happen if he gets to Alexandria and is put in that hellhole that has state, the local and federal prisoners nearby. I've been there. I've done reports from there. That place is a very scary place. And, you know, I don't know. The CIA is, they never forget. They're like the mob, all right? They don't forget. They got their Luca Brasi's with a government badge out there. And I don't think he'll ever make it through a trial. I don't think he would ever go to trial here. He'll die in the meantime. And I'm surprised they haven't tried to kill him. Yeah, maybe they have. But that's all I can tell you, John, is that we need a lot of direct action going forward. I'm going to be doing it out there for 10 days prior to the X day, the 20th, in New York City, at the UN, all over the city, to be honest with you, with one or two giant billboard trucks, you know, semi-truck size billboard trucks. We did in D.C. on much smaller level. And that's all I can do. That's not going to change things. There needs to be a lot of action. Everyone's going to have to pick up their axe and plows and plow away.
Randy, let's say that the worst happens and that Julian is indeed extradited to the United States. He ends up in Virginia and a trial is scheduled at the federal courthouse for the Eastern District of Virginia. Then what? Is a deal possible, let's say, between Julian and the U.S. government? Does he go on trial for his life and risk exactly that? And what can his supporters do to continue to show support if and when a trial begins?
What they need to do is a preemptive strike. They need to be outside of that Alexandria, Virginia courthouse and Kronberg and the handpicked judge. The whole thing is worse than any Soviet trial during the late 30s trial with the Judge Fleischer in Berlin in the 30s. All right. There's no chance of him surviving a trial here because it's already pre-written. It's like watching Chinatown, the movie, and over again, and hoping that that Faye Dunaway doesn't get killed at the end. All right, it's a pre-written script. It's just how they manage it PR-wise, you know, because this is just a formality. This upcoming trial, which will drag on for years and years. How much can somebody take? You know, I couldn't take it for a year. I couldn't take it. He's done it for 10 years now, and no sunlight for 10, 11 years coming up, maybe 12 years since 2012. It's a long period of time, and the psychological damages, Nils Melzer has pointed out, is indelible. And I don't know what we can do at that point, you know. But I can't imagine that this is going to be good for Biden if he's going to be the candidate in the upcoming election with all the other repressive measures that he's taken and violent measures that he's taken on an international scale. I don't see this being a good move for him. I think it'll backfire in many ways. And when people know the real story, journalists start saying, well, maybe I should get involved in this.
Randy Credico, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Julian Assange has sacrificed more than anybody I know for the greater good. The ultimate test of a man's conscience may be his willingness to sacrifice something today for future generations whose words of thanks will not be heard. I believe that that's what we're seeing here. Assange has suffered for many years at the hands of the powerful, but he's doing it all for us. For transparency, for freedom of speech, and for freedom of the press. Great achievement is born of this great sacrifice. Future generations will thank Julian Assange. I'd like to thank our guests, Joe Loria and Randy Credico, for joining us today and for sharing their thoughts on the Julian Assange case. And thanks also to our viewers for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.